Hello everyone, and welcome to another ESN podcast episode. My name is Mirto, and today we're talking about the future of Erasmus. I'm particularly excited because we're joined by a very special guest. So please welcome Oana Dumitrescu, who is a policy officer at the European Commission. Welcome, Oana.
Thanks a lot for having me.
We're very happy that you could be here. So why don't we start a little bit by getting to know you better? Could you introduce yourself and tell us a bit about what you do at the European Commission?
Right, so actually I've been living in Brussels for 3 years now, and I came here to be a Blue Book trainee, so to work as a stagiaire for the European Commission. I'm originally from Romania, and before that I lived in the UK and I was Erasmus in Germany. In fact, I actually have a long history of having worked with ESN, and this is a lot how my kind of international trajectory kind of unfolded, beginning with ESN. And indeed, having had different traineeships here in Brussels, I now work with the Directorate for Education, Culture, Audiovisual and Sport, youth as well. Always like a big, it's a big title, where I work in the unit for higher education. And there I work on issues regarding the Erasmus Plus program, so the development of the new program, as well as policy, more policy issues such as the European Universities Initiative.
That sounds so interesting and definitely like a very exciting field to work in. How do you feel your life has changed now that you work in the heart of Europe? What is that like?
Well, I have to say, because of the fact that I lived abroad and because of the fact that I was a volunteer in ESN, I already had this like very big international dimension within my life. So I think that the like Brussels is a really good place to continue that professional wise and so on. So in that way, my life didn't change that much. It just kind of became fuller in this kind of like expat city, let's say. The way my life changed with working in the Commission is it's a challenging job, I think. It's the type of job that you have to work very hard, but it's very difficult to please, let's say, absolutely everybody. It's a job that implies compromise, and it's a job that implies listening to a lot of people. And this part I really, really like, because I find that we're a directorate where we engage a lot with the sector, we engage a lot with students. So this is something that I'm quite excited about, and it's a very dynamic environment, which I really like.
I think that this sounds like a lovely thing. Like you describe it in such a way that makes me feel really happy.
Yes, that's good.
Just hearing you talk about it, yeah. So you mentioned working with what the Erasmus program is going to look like
Yes. In
the next years. How do you think the program will need to change in order to adapt to the new needs brought by time as well as by the situation introduced by the pandemic?
Right, so that's a really, really relevant question, especially during these times. And we know that there have been especially difficult times for students and for mobile students, which is something that we're taking really seriously and that we're really trying to somehow adapt to. So first of all, we need to acknowledge that our higher education systems have to be a bit more flexible. And we had to acknowledge ourselves within the European Commission that we had to be flexible about what is going on with the program at the moment. So this is why we offered full flexibility for member states and national agencies in the different states to be able to implement the program in a flexible manner, meaning that they could allow students to have a virtual mobility in case they could not actually do it in a physical way, as well as try to support and offer financial support for those that had unforeseen expenses due to the pandemic. So this is just a bit more about the situation as it is now. But if we talk about the future of Erasmus, what we've noted and we're particularly pleased about is the fact that the priorities that we have for the future program are actually very compatible with the needs for the future and the needs during this crisis. And this, I think, is because of the fact that we've been, as I said before, in touch a lot with the students, in touch a lot with the higher education institution, with our stakeholders in higher education, meaning that we really knew what the needs were kind of on the ground, and now we can develop them in the new program. And having said that kind of introduction, these new priorities are, as I said, digitalization. So we have some initiatives there that really are based on digitalization. And here we're talking about the European Student Card Initiative as well as the Erasmus Plus app. So this is a project that is pushing more towards the digitalization of administrative procedures in Erasmus so that we make it easier for students to go abroad, we make it simpler for them to sign their agreements, for instance, by using the Erasmus Plus app, but also for the coordinators who actually have to deal with a lot of paperwork. That's one of the things that we're working on. We're also creating this European student identity by having this European Student Card Initiative that will allow access to mobile students to the different facilities and services of the host university. And this is one side of it. On the other side, we're trying to play a bit with more like flexible. As you said, we need more flexibility and kind of adaptation to the future needs. Flexible modes of mobility, which is this blended mobility format. So what blended mobility is a component of physical mobility combined with virtual mobility. And we saw the need for this in order to include more people in Erasmus. So we're not trying to replace physical mobility because we know this is such a huge component of the Erasmus Plus program and we would not want to do that. But there's certain groups that are underrepresented in Erasmus Plus. And here you can look at students with disability, or you can look at students who are parents, for instance, and they cannot go, or it is not feasible for them to go abroad for a longer period of time. So what we want to do is facilitate for them to go abroad, meaning that they have a virtual component either before or after the mobility. So this is also something that will be part of the new program, and we see it particularly relevant also with this situation. But hopefully, when the situation allows, physical mobility should be the norm.
You've raised some great topics that definitely give us a lot of food for thought about how we can improve mobility in the future. What else is it that you guys are working on over at the European Commission? What is it that you're working on that you think is worth mentioning for young people who are listening to us now and are interested in finding out more about what Erasmus stands for and what it will stand for in the future?
So kind of very much intertwined with this concept of digitalization for the new program, which is very relevant in COVID-19 as well, is also the notion of inclusion. So this is a way to make it through blended mobility and digitalization. We're trying to expand a bit the program to reach out to more target groups. But there are other measures as well that we're working on in order to stimulate inclusion, meaning that we're looking at distributing funding and grants in such a manner that students coming from disadvantaged socioeconomic backgrounds can have access to the Erasmus Plus program. So this is again something that we're really looking at, another initiative of the next program, together with something very relevant for this commission and for young people, looking at all of the massive movements that have gone about before COVID-19, I guess, but also right now, regarding green Erasmus, so environmentally friendly practices and the need to put our planet first. So we're looking at improving this point by a series of measures, for instance, potentially looking into offering stimulants for students to take the train rather than take the plane and having extra funding for that. This is something we're looking into The program is not really finalized at this stage. We're looking at the possibility of making a priority for an environmentally friendly practices to be part of the cooperation projects that we fund under the Key Action 2 of the Erasmus Plus program. So making sure that universities cooperate in order to work on these kind of issues. And the project that I work on, for instance, in the commission, which is the accreditation for the program. So universities need to have this Erasmus Charter for Higher Education in order to access the Erasmus Plus program and to obtain funding from the program. One of the principles of these novelties of the program are going to be included in the new principles of the charter, meaning that when universities, and now they all have to reapply to be accredited, they have to actually expand on how will my university implement environmentally friendly practices, how will they do this in a context of Erasmus, how will my university ensure active inclusion measures within the scope of Erasmus Plus as well as within the scope of our university. And also they will have to commit to implementing all of these digitalization processes. These are just some of the initiatives that we have in mind. We're also working, also funding under Erasmus Plus, we're funding the European Universities Initiative, which is a lovely initiative because it's kind of meant to facilitate these alliances of universities coming from completely different geographical areas, and they have to have together virtual campuses where they focus a lot on student-centered learning and teaching, where they're really trying to test all of these innovative concepts. So really, European universities is a really exciting initiative as well that is funded under the Erasmus Plus program.
Yes, that is absolutely lovely as an initiative. I think it's very interesting and something that will be very successful in the future.
Hopefully, yes.
Hopefully, yes.
Now we have 41 alliances that we've selected. Pending on everything I'm talking about is really pending on Council, Commission and Parliament reaching a conclusion over the Erasmus Plus budget, which has not been decided yet. So let's see what happens there. Yes.
Fingers crossed.
Yes.
So tell me, we can both agree for sure that Erasmus is very important for young Europeans and for how Europe is going to look like in the future. Mm-hmm. Could you describe why you think Erasmus will be important in the future based on the current political and social situation in Europe right now?
Yes.
I think that, for me at least, I believe that it's important to bring people together more than ever. So what is your view as somebody who works in the field and who has contact with people who also work in it? And you probably discuss a lot about all of those topics.
I think it's really important for us, you know, like for me as for you, for what you're doing and for what I'm doing, to take a step back sometimes and look at these like social and political issues and get to understand the perspective of people who didn't have an international experience, right? Because I feel like, I was telling you even when I, you know, when we entered this room that I think that this international dimension is just so important in my life. And it's been important with ESN, it's important now, but by having a diversity of friends from all over, you kind of get used to it at some point and you think this is how life is and you take it for granted and you don't really think about it so much. But I have to say that there's so much richness in having personal and professional relationships with people of different cultures. And this is something that I think people experience for the first time in their lives through Erasmus. And we see that people like are changed after this kind of experience because they think, okay, we're going to go, we're going to, you know, have fun and I meet people and it's exciting. And according to, you know, they go to a country that they really wanted to go to or a country that they were interested in, like it depends on where they go to as well. But actually they end up having not only a very deep personal connection. We see that a lot of people, actually we have this impact study, the Erasmus Plus impact study that the commission carried out. And on a personal level, people meet their life partners on Erasmus. So they have very, very deep and meaningful connections. So they have lifelong friendships after their Erasmus. But also, In terms of professional aspirations, we see that actually former Erasmus students are more employable after their Erasmus. They have a better vision over what they want to do with their lives and their careers. They obtain, for instance, a lot of the trainees are hired afterwards in the company where they worked for on their Erasmus. So we see a lot of statistical data that points into very positive impact on the professional and personal life of former Erasmus students. But we also see that it enhances the spirit of European identity and attachment to Europe. And this is where it becomes, I would say, important, because I think it really shows people the need to act together, to come together and work and build something together. Because we see in like kind of a wider geopolitical context, our continent has always been strong when it cooperated together. Yes. And I think it's very hard to do that when you haven't been out of your country, or maybe you have been to travel, but when you see that someone is really just like you, you know, that life goes on in the same kind of way and you have the same challenges or different challenges, I think Erasmus is brilliant for actually exposing people to that. Then I think it so happens that Erasmus students kind of continue that throughout their lives and they want to maintain this internationalization aspect.
Now, we discussed so much about what values Erasmus mm-hmm. hopes to stand for.
Yes.
So how do you think organizations like ESN mm-hmm. contribute to that and encourage maybe Erasmus students to mm-hmm. get to know their countries where they go to for their mobility and the locals and get in touch with different cultures in different ways? How do you think ESN contributes to that?
So the reason why I think ESN is so essential in all of this is the fact that at the core of ESN is this need and intention of helping others. And most ESN volunteers, you know, they're students, they don't have a lot of time maybe because they're probably studying, maybe working a part-time job, and also they volunteer to be in ESN. So it's so noble to say, given this context, when I should be selfish and thinking about myself, I'm actually thinking, no, I actually want to integrate these people in the local society and I want to get to know about these people and I want to help them out. And I think there's nothing more beautiful than that. So for instance, I was in ESN. Now, of course, I'm not involved with ESN anymore, but it's kind of a quality that I want to maintain my whole life. What can I do in my local community to actually support and get people together? So I think that's one of the things that on all levels of your life, it's just so important to stay connected. Secondly, I think ESN is such an important push for us policymakers. By connecting with ESN, they can tell us this is the reality on the ground. This is actually what is happening in this context. People need support on this and these people are left out. By ESN doing this, we've managed to look in the right way and actually come up with the right initiatives to overcome that. And it's not only ESN, of course, it's also student unions, it's different student organizations that we cooperate with on that. But ESN is definitely a big, big part of it.
I definitely agree. I really do agree. So you mentioned that you were a part of ESN actively.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about your ESN career, let's say?
Yes.
And how did ESN help you with the decisions that you've made in your life and eventually in your actual career at the European Commission?
Yes. I don't think I would have had this career path if it hadn't been for ESN. So I, as I told you, I studied in the UK. I'm Romanian, but I went for university in the UK. I joined ESN actually before I went on Erasmus. I joined ESN in my second year of university, where I was a secretary for my local section in Southampton. You think all of this student volunteering and all of these things are easy, but I have to say that some of the most difficult challenges in terms of, you know, budgeting that local section. And I think it's really, really useful because it gave me this mindset of being very solution oriented, which I think is extraordinarily important for my professional career. I think it's something I learned firsthand there. And then I kind of grew by joining the International Committee for Education in ESN, where I became vice chair for competence development.
Great.
Which is very nice. We got to do a lot of work on skills development, and then I became national representative of ESN UK. First of all, there's a lot of skills that you gain from ESN. I would say the critical thinking in the CNR, the Council of National Representatives, is something that really helped me. And you get to know a lot of people with a lot of different kind of interests, a lot of different points of view from you. I have to say that I had close friends in a CNR that had completely different opinions from me when it came to strategic matters of ESN. And when I was faced with that, it was kind of tough then, but I think it was just a lesson for life for me now working in the commission and having to, yes, deal with very different perspectives and points of view and interests that stakeholders have, and being able to manage them. And I think if you have an experience in the CNR, you definitely have diplomatic abilities for life.
I'm sure.
Also, on a personal level, I've made some of my most amazing and long-lasting friendships in ESN.
That's lovely.
Yes. I have to say that it's a very intense environment, you know that, with
sure.
All you have, like you're trying to, you know, like you're studying, you're trying to do a good job, like in your studies, and you're probably doing a master's thesis or something, and at the same time,
It can be a lot.
So it's a very intense environment and it's a lot of work, actually. Yes, and I remember it never ends. The thing is that it really teaches you to be resilient. It kind of teaches you to be stress resistant. And that's what I mean. I think people in ESN and my friends in ESN have seen me at my best, but I think they've seen me at my worst as well in ESN, because you get really sleep deprived and stressed and there's all of these situations. So I think that really builds a friendship when you have to overcome certain things and people see you also when you're not at your best. With three of the girls from my national board, we were in the UK. We have this tradition of meeting every year in Sevilla.
That's lovely.
Obviously, this year it didn't happen.
Yeah, obviously, but
but it's really nice because we meet up and we're in very different stages of our lives, and we saw each other grow, and we saw each other having bad times and good times, and we're very different people still, I think. But this previous experience really bonded us, and now we have each other's back.
So the whole experience did really very big impact on you even now.
Yeah, personally and professionally, for sure. And I think there's one other thing that I actually would have wanted to hear when I was an ESNer, because there's a ton of skills that I could enumerate, but there's certain things that are really important. I think ESN is actually a really good time to try different things and also make mistakes. It's a very safe space for making mistakes. I mean, it might not sound safe all the time because you have all of this network and this pressure and it's like... But I actually have to say that being a vice chair, for instance, was kind of my first time in a sort of management position. You had to kind of take ownership of that.
And you do have some responsibilities.
Yeah, that's great experience for life. Because I think that having made certain mistakes in ESN, I haven't made them necessarily anymore in my professional life. And I'm more patient, I'm more understanding of certain things, I have a different perspective. But you can't get there unless you have that experience and unless you make mistakes.
So it's better to make those mistakes when you're a volunteer?
I would say, yes.
Now, I would like to maybe address a little bit younger people in general who might be listening to us right now and who might be interested in following a career in the EU. What is some advice that you would like to give to them?
That's a great question. I was talking a lot about this with a lot of my friends, because I have friends who came for different traineeship sessions, for instance, in the commission or in the parliament. And now we have two trainees in my unit in the commission, and I'm their advisor. After having been 3 years in Brussels and seeing who stays and who doesn't, I have to say that one of the most important qualities to have is to be resilient. So I think if you have this wish to work in European institutions or in the Brussels bubble, there are opportunities for you. If you are engaged in ESN, you most likely have a very rich CV and set of skills that can recommend you for a job here. But I think what makes the difference is being resilient enough. So you really need to be ready to get a bunch of no's and a bunch of interviews that don't go very well. It's going to be tough for a while. You can see that I'm talking from experience.
No, it's good. We need to hear that.
Yeah, and it's going to be tougher when people don't talk about this just as much. I talk to ESNers sometimes and they're like, oh, that's amazing that you're having this career, and they see only this part. But they don't see the part where, you know, I was living with a friend for a couple of months, almost ready to pack and go back to Romania because I was sure, like, it's not going to work out. And people really need to know that this is part of the story, and they need to be resilient and to persist, to have this clear vision of what they want to do, but to let go of the way they get there. Because life, you might really think that, oh, this is what's important, but then, like, life might say, no, actually, it's not that. But that doesn't mean you're not going to get there. You're just going to get there a different way.
This is great advice. I think this is something we all need to keep in mind.
Yes.
Sometimes we have a plan and we think that this is how I'm going to get to where I want to be.
Yeah.
But yes, maybe life has different plans, or maybe there's another path that you haven't ever considered before.
Yes, I think that's a really good one. And I think something that, again, I would have wanted to know when I was a student and when I was in ESN. It was very hard for me to understand European affairs working environment, because I would go to conferences or I would meet people, and people talk in quite abstract terms about what they actually do. So I was not entirely sure what it means. And I've actually had this. I had an ESNer come to me at an AGM in Thessaloniki who asked me a very good question, which was, what do you actually do? I want to know. Like, your task list, what do you do in a day? And I was like, yes, this is the kind of thing that people should talk more about, and policy officers and people in the commission and the parliament should talk more about. Because I talked about our initiatives, of course, but this is, you know, for another podcast. So like, how does the life of someone working in that field looks like? Mm-hmm. Because when you're going to see exactly what those people do, you're going to be thinking, oh, actually, I can do that as well. Oh, actually, I'm also already doing this.
Mm, yeah, sometimes the title sounds a little too abstract or something that you don't understand.
Exactly. As much as you can, try to approach people that you look up to and that have the positions that you would want, and ask them, but how does this go? What are the kinds of tasks that you do? What are the skills that were important to you? And I think most people will be very happy to reply to those questions.
I think that's very good to remember for everybody listening who might be interested in a career like that, or any career for that matter. It's good to ask questions. It's good to be specific with your questions.
Yes.
And to be open to new possibilities about how you're going to get there. So let's all keep that in mind.
And don't sell yourself short. I think, I think you have a lot of skills, and I think you should realize that. Don't go there with the attitude that you know everything, because you definitely don't know everything. And there's a lot to learn from your colleagues.
But you have to learn, and you should be willing to.
So yes.
Maybe that's the attitude you want.
But you have something to bring to the table. Definitely. For sure.
Mm-hmm. I think it's good to encourage young people to go for that, because young people always have fresh ideas and a very new perspective, and they also have direct contact with other young people who are what the commission might work for a lot of the time.
Yes.
So that's very good to have that in the commission as well, I guess. This is my guess as somebody who just watches from the outside. I think that's just very important to keep that in mind. So thank you so much for joining us today. I'm very happy I was able to meet you and have this conversation.
Me as well.
I learned a lot, and I definitely am going to remember all of your advice for the future. So I hope you also had a good time.
Yes, I had a really good time. If there's something that I want to say for ESNers is, I know this is a really probably difficult time, and I know it's difficult being a volunteer in ESN, and it's quite stressful and it's a lot of work. But I have to say, it's something that is so important. This whole idea of coming and helping someone else. I feel like everything in my life that was good came from the fact that I also helped. And maybe it sounds really abstract and so on, but I think it makes such a big difference for you also mental health-wise to know that you're being grateful, that you're helping someone else. This network of people that you're going to make in ESN are really going to be friends for life, or a professional network that is really going to help you grow. So really, even during these challenging times, do not ever question the fact that doing something for others is important, that your job as a volunteer is important, because it's absolutely amazing.
What a lovely message to close this episode. Again, thank you so much for being with us. That is the episode for the future of Erasmus, and also some great advice for future European Union involved people and Erasmus students. Thank you so much, Ivana, and thank you everybody for tuning in.